From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made Tuesday, September 12th. That was primary night here in Rochester. And that's when Democratic voters headed to the polls to choose from 13 candidates for 5 at-large seats. It's an important election year with a number of high-profile city issues dominating discussions throughout the city. Most of the winners of the Democratic primary are here in studio today. Their names will be on the ballot in November, along with several candidates on the Republican, Working Families, Green, Women's Equality, and Reform party lines. And we'll be able to hear from all of them before November. But our focus today is on the Democratic candidates. And if history repeats itself, they will likely be members of City Council in 2018. So for this hour, we want to hear from them about their stance on a number of issues facing our city, and we'll give you a chance to ask your questions and share your comments as well. I'd like to welcome my guests. Malik Evans, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Mitch Gruber, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
Willie Joe Lightfoot is here.
Present.
And Jackie Ortiz, welcome back.
Thank you.
Current City Council President Loretta Scott was also a winner on primary night, but she was unavailable to join this conversation today, so we will invite her to participate in a future discussion. And listeners, I invite you to participate as well. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can email the program at connections@wxxi.org, and you can find me on Twitter at mmacmedia. So I'd like to start things off by talking about the Democratic Party itself. We've had a number of conversations on this program before about the future of the party, how it can heal, and Mayor Lovely Warren won the mayoral primary by a wide margin, 62% of the vote, and her political observers say she has positioned herself as the de facto leader of the Democratic Party locally. Some critics said that they don't know if there will be a Democratic Party in the city due to the tension that currently exists. Whether or not you agree with that, we'll discuss. But former Democratic mayoral candidate Rachel Barnhart told WXXI News on primary night she thinks there might not even be a Democratic Party in Monroe County and that the future of the party could be determined by Mayor Warren. And here is a quote from Rachel Barnhart. She said, quote, she has a lot of power, and if she wants to use it to create her own city Democratic Party, she can certainly do that. But as far as what's left, if she doesn't want to support the process, then I would say the organization is severely crippled, end quote. So I'll go around the table and ask the candidates here if they agree. Jackie, I'll start with you.
Sure. I would absolutely disagree. I really think that, you know, the party will only get stronger at this point because if you listen to anything that the mayor had to say in regards to her remarks that evening, she was very positive. She was very encouraging in regards to bringing everyone together hereafter. And we already have a meeting coming up as early as next week to be able to join campaigns together because there's still more work to be done before November. And we have county races to run and win at this point. And so I don't agree with that. And I think that there is only upwards to go. And I'm very confident that the mayor will be able to pull this all together along with the support of everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Mitch, what do you think?
I'm not concerned about whether or not there will be a future of the Democratic Party. I think that's a bit hyperbolic. And I think the party is going to continue to come together. That's not to say there isn't work to do. I will say one of the most interesting things that I heard as a first-time candidate for office was that this was one of the deepest benches in terms of, you know, there were, I think, 13 candidates at the end of the Democratic primary, a lot of really well-run campaigns. School board had a good chunk of very viable candidates. I think those are good things. I'll also say, and I'm sure you'll ask me later, that I don't think the Democratic Party necessarily did a fantastic job of helping to foster new young candidates who have never run for office before. And I think that's a place where we can look together how to do better, how to build a deeper bench. But I'm not worried. I'm optimistic.
Mm-hmm. And that's some feedback that we've heard from a few first-time candidates, that the party could have done more to support up-and-comers. And we can talk about that a little more later. Willie, what do you think about the future of the party?
I think the future of the party is great. I think it's amazing. I think it's awesome. I'm so excited and elated about moving into the future with this. First of all, I want to congratulate everyone here who's won and moved on to this far. And I want to congratulate the ones who also ran and were not successful there. It was a pleasure running with those individuals. I agree with Mitch that it was great to see a lot of new faces and people that went all the way to, you know, we started with 19, actually it was 21, and we dwindled down to 13. And so I thought that was great. I think the party is going to fix its own issues and problems. Look at, I said this before in this show, if you look at nationally what happened, and the national party was divided, and then they came together, and they start working on the bigger issues. I think you're going to see the same thing happen. All politics are local. I think you'll see the same thing happen locally. This mayor, we've already had meetings already with the 23rd, 24th LD. We came together and we met. We also met with MCDC just last Monday or just coming Monday. We had meetings and we were all in attendance. Those, you know, and we're moving forward already. I mean, it's not, you know, most of us already know each other and already have relationships with one another already anyway. You know, so it's just a matter of just, as the mayor said, even herself has to mend some wounds there, you know, and get over some things. And she alluded to that even herself. So I think that everyone's in position to move forward. It's just a matter of people. Talk is cheap. It takes money to buy meat. And then you also have to see what people's actions are. So I think, you know, our actions have been, and I say are because I work on them with the mayor's campaign. I think we have shown that we're ready to move forward and work together. We've been at all the meetings so far that they've had, and we're going to continue to go.
What about these two factions, though, Willie? How do we bridge the divide between those two groups?
Well, I said again on this show, egos have to come out of the room, and we have to start realizing that the people who lose when we are fighting are the people in the community. Those are the ones who lose. It's not necessarily us, but it's the community. So I think... at least from my experience, I've been on both factions. I've seen both factions. And I think in my experience, I've seen that, I think that, you know, those things will be, as we look at what can we do for this community, the bigger picture, I think we'll get past a lot of those that stuff.
Okay. Malik.
Yeah, I think that ditto to what everyone else said. First off, you're always going to have a Democratic Party. The other thing I'll make a point of is that this isn't the first time you've had issues in with parties. It's not the only place where we have these challenges. It happens on a regular basis. But let me tell you what I'm committed to. I'm committed to working with everyone. And when you are an elected official, which I've been for a long time and have worked with elected officials for a long time, the public expects us to be able to deliver and have results. So they don't want us to spend a lot of time talking about petty internal party politics. They just don't have the patience for it, and neither do I. And I've always run campaigns, and I've always worked with folks from all over the place, and I will continue to do that. Continue to do that going forward. The party will get stronger. And when you look at what's going on nationally, there's no way with which you look at what's going on with the national level in the city of Rochester and in Monroe County that we would not have a strong Democratic Party, because you have to have a strong opposition party regardless of where you are, be it in Rochester or Kentucky. You have to have strong multiple parties, and it's just not the Democratic Party. You got the Republicans and the Greens and the other ones. Those parties will always be around and exist.
Mm-hmm. Going back to Mitch's earlier comment about the party not necessarily being welcoming to new candidates, most of you, all of you, have run for office before. What did you feel, you know, being in that environment? Did you feel, do you echo his sentiment? Do you understand where he's coming from, or do you disagree? Jackie?
I think I would echo his sentiment. I remember the first time that I ran, and it was an uphill battle. It doesn't necessarily get any easier, you know, the more you move forward. But by the same token, I think it is a very confusing process. There are a lot of steps. There are a lot of meetings. And if you're really going to be serious about this, it would be nice to have a better orientation and some understanding of, you know, what that structure looks like and how it actually functions to really kind of get people ready to be able to do this. I know there is some basic information that's provided, but I do think that there is some work to be done there to be able to be supportive of new candidates, because it can be a very intimidating process.
Why do you think that hasn't been done already?
You know, I I think that there are a number of opportunities there, but I think that there are so many competing priorities at this point in time with the number of things that have to get done. Perhaps it's just one of those things that just kind of falls to the bottom at this point. And so it's going to really take a reprioritization of the things that need to get done, and that's just going to have to be looked at as something that is important.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think for a moment that anyone was out to get me, and I can't imagine that any of my colleagues who were running for the first time felt that either. I think the challenge, the issue, is that it's a hard process to run for office. I think anyone around the table here will tell you that. And the party and the individuals that make up the party all already have horses in the race. And that's understandable. But if we want to become stronger as a party, I think we need to think about how to continue to build a deeper bench, and not just in certain races across the county. I mean, that's the obviously the big elephant in the room, is that we have to figure out how to get more power within the entire county. And that requires building a deep bench and training young candidates. And I think that's just something that we need to put some strategy behind.
Mm-hmm. We heard from a few unsuccessful candidates, I think it was last week, about that very topic, and they echoed your sentiment. They said, you know, it wasn't malicious, but we didn't feel like we were supported. What was the biggest challenge, do you think, from your perspective, Mitch? You know, the word support can seem intangible, but what could have helped you the most?
Well, I don't know that there's an answer to that, because I didn't experience it, right? But what I can tell you is that, and this is no offense to my colleagues around the table here, I had to raise more money than all of them combined to stand a chance. And that's a really challenging thing for someone to do, to raise a lot of money for a city council campaign. I'm blessed and I'm fortunate that I had the supporters who are willing to help me get to where I am. But that's a really, really challenging process. And if you don't have a political orientation and you don't have the dollars, you pretty much don't have a chance. And that's a really enlightening thing for people to think about as they explore running for office.
Mm-hmm. You know, I first ran for office when I was 23 years old. I was 1 year out of college. So I was this kid that was wet behind the ears. I would tell any new candidate that's interested in running for office, one of the things that you have to do is start building a team early, start getting advice early from folks that just aren't in politics but that are also outside of politics. It's very difficult to run. And people say, oh, politics. I tell people it is a blood sport. It's a tough thing to do, regardless of what level you're running on, from dog catcher to school board to city council. It's a tough business to be able to be in. So you really have to ensure that you are starting early, getting that information early, because it's very easy to feel like you're left out there. The other thing I will say is that you, in reality, you can't expect anybody to make it easy for you. There are no folks that are going to make it easy for you when you're running for office. So you with that in mind, I think you have to really start planning a year or 2 years in advance if you're really going to do this in order to be able to do this. Because to Mitch's point, you have to raise money, you have to do all those things that you typically are not oriented to as a citizen. We know the low levels of participation in politics. So when you're jumping into it, it's not an easy process. But I would tell anybody, don't expect anyone to really hold your hand with that process. You have to be super proactive in order to really have a chance.
For sure. No doubt about that. This was not about me griping. This is about us as a party. I think everyone would identify that we need to continue to deepen the bench and continue to encourage people to run for office and provide them with the tools to be able to do that as a party. But no question, Malik is right. It's going to be hard no matter what.
Mm-hmm. And I think also it's a new day. I mean, let's just face it. I mean, everything has its cycles in time. And we have a young mayor. And the fact of the matter is, you know, her ticket did very well. I mean, Mitch was on that ticket. You benefited from the mayor's support. So that wasn't like, it wasn't just about money, because I didn't have half the money you had. But I also benefited from being on the mayor's ticket and having that support. So that's normal, having the support of individuals who support you in the past or who may have name recognition. Politics is a popularity contest. Let's just face it, okay? It's not about so much your policy and what you're going to do and all of this kind of stuff. People in Rochester, if they don't know you and they don't believe in you, then, like I said, I didn't have all of that money. I didn't raise all of that money. I didn't have as many lawns. I didn't do the lawn sign wars. I didn't even do a mailing. You know what I mean? But I did the work. I've been working in this community for so long that people recognize the name and the work that I've done in this community and the alliances that I've made. So it's not all about money. It's not all about lawn signs. It's not all about mailings. It's not all about that. It's also about the work that you do in this community and people believing in you and believing what you can do and also the alliances that you make. So, you know, my hats go off to this administration and this mayor. We have to look at the new day of the party. It's just a new day, and it's okay. Changes is okay. And I think we're in a place and time where we're seeing a shift and a change, where young people are starting to take into power positions, trying to take leadership or being in leadership roles, and that's okay. That's all right. And I think the same thing we see happening in a lot of things in the workplace is a lot of the older people tend to not want to relinquish any of the power and control. You know, and I think what we're seeing today is that young people are the type of ways, if you're not going to give it to them, they're going to take it. You know, that's what the type of generation that we're dealing with this X generation now. But I also want to state that with the party, I think what something that may be lacking that, you know, I'm looking forward to helping moving forward. If my father used to do a program called PERTO, Political Education, Registration, Training, and Organizing. And it was a way they had, we actually had an office on Jefferson Avenue where we trained anyone and everyone who wanted to know about politics. There are so many misconceptions out there. People on felonies that think they can't vote. People who are registered and think they're registered Democrats, but they're also registered as a blank and can't vote in primaries. There's so many issues that knocking on the door that we find out that people just don't understand. The changing of address and affidavits and absentee balloting. All of these things that people want to understand about voting that they don't understand, that I think year-round we should be doing, and not just during election time. And that's programs like what my father had that I want to continue upon being elected in January. I want to surface that program called PERTO. And that's something that I would like to bring to the table with the party and work with doing that locally, and then maybe that can spread out into the suburbs and people can take that the platform that we're doing and use it in their neighborhoods and communities as well.
And to Willie's point, we used to have, because I know I did presentations for this, the party used to have a campaign school back a couple of years ago where they were people that were interested in running for office. You would come, and I remember when I had just got elected and I came and talked about my campaign and what the process was. So yeah, those types of political education things I think are absolutely critical to get more people involved, because let's face it, turnout was not great. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be great in November, and just about every election turnout is not where it needs to be. Even in the presidential year, when you compare us to other industrialized nations or just nations in general in the world, our turnout in elections could be a lot better. And education, I think, it could be a great key component to increasing that.
I want to jump in because, Will, you raised a point a bit earlier that reflects an email from a listener named Joshua. He says, my concern is that some of your guests were on the mayor's slate during the primary, and that might mean less independence for them in office. Can they address whether they'd be willing to vote against the mayor on issues like Parcel 5 or others? And again, that's from Joshua in Rochester. So, Willie, we'll start with you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you like this, and I'll say this because this was a big issue when I was running, and when I made the lifestyles comment was made, and that was a big issue in the LGBTQ community. I think the same thing responds here. People voted for, over 9,000 people voted for me, and I think that was put out there, in a way it was put out there, to try to create this divide, like I wasn't going to be open or independent to the LGBTQ community. Well, the fact of the matter is, and this is what I told that community, and this is what I'm going to tell the caller here, when someone calls my office, I don't ask them if they're what their sexual orientation is or what color they are. I'm a fireman. When somebody's house is burning, I don't go, when we go to the house, I don't say, what is your sexual orientation or whatever. And what I'm saying by that is, independency starts by the person's heart, not by who you're aligned to, if you will. Those are friendships and things that go on forever. It doesn't change what's in your heart. So when it comes to Parcel 5 or any other issue, whether it's a issue like what I was just talking about or a Parcel 5 issue, you're dealing with a group of individuals that I believe that are smart enough and have enough integrity that they're going to do what's best for the people in the community and not what they're aligned to. And I think the people, obviously, in this community identify with that because they voted for us. And I think they voted for us not just because of who we were aligned with, but because they know our hearts and they know the type of people that we are, that we're going to be for all people, and we're going to do what's best, regardless of what the issue is, what's best for everyone in the residents of the city of Rochester.
Mm-hmm. Mitch, you're also on the mayor's slate. How would you answer that question from Joshua?
Yeah, I would answer it by saying that ultimately I believe and believed that Mayor Warren was the best person for the job. Out of the candidates that were there, I think not only did she excel compared to those candidates, but on top of that, I think that she had 3.5 years of some pretty good management of the city. That's not to say that everything was perfect. That's not to say I agree with her on every single thing that she's done. But ultimately, the reason that I decided to run for city council is because of the work that I've done trying to address the number one issue in this city, which is poverty and concentrated poverty at that. Anyone who wants to disagree with that is welcome to. I don't see any argument that it's not the number one issue facing our city. And Mayor Warren has done a tremendous job in 3.5 years of building the right initiatives and the right methodologies of addressing concentrated poverty in a way that I haven't seen as a citizen in Rochester. So I'm very, very happy to have supported her. I'm very happy to have had her support. But I ran my own campaign. I mean, I ran my own campaign from day one. I worked with Mayor Warren on petitioning. I worked with Mayor Warren on Get Out the Vote. I supported her. I voted for her. But you go to my website and you look at the things that I promised to work on, the things that are near and dear to my heart. Those are things that I'm going to continue to work on, and that will be something that I think I'll be more successful at because Mayor Warren and I both support each other. But I'm not afraid to vote my conscience on the things that come across the table.
Is one of those things Parcel 5?
Parcel 5 was the furthest thing from my mind when I decided to run for office. I'll tell you, there's a lot of vacant lots in the city that made me want to run for office, but Parcel 5 wasn't one of them. Drive down Jefferson Avenue, drive down my street on King Street, drive down anywhere in the Northeast. Those are the vacant lots that encouraged me to run, not the one in the middle of downtown.
And don't worry, listeners, we're not having a full hour discussion about Parcel 5. That's something the candidates mentioned when they first came in. But I think it's important to bring up because we do have so many questions that come in from listeners about Parcel 5 whenever we talk about it. But Mitch, you said back in April, one issue for you with Parcel 5 was funding and revenue, and you needed to see more of that before you can support the project. And you also said that you think art can unify a community, but you just don't want to see Broadway. You think it has to be inclusive, an inclusive performing arts center, and you had questions about whether the current proposal fits that idea. How do you feel about the project now? Mayor Warren supports that project. Where do you stand currently with Parcel 5?
Interestingly enough, there still is no proposal to look at. So those comments that I made in April, which I had a feeling were going to be brought up, and they stand the test of time. I mean, we need to see what are the numbers that are coming back. I went to the special hearing that council put on, and you had a guy like Garth Fagan talking about his concerns with the project. Well, I'm really happy to have been there to listen. I'm really happy that stuff is on record. And now it's time to see what the proposal is. But there's no sense in me trying to position myself one way or another until there's something to actually evaluate.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good point that Mitch made. I mean, is it $85 million or $100 million? Mm-hmm. How much is the city going to sell it for? What's the economic impact? None of those things have come to, and Jackie, who's a current member of city council, can answer, probably knows better than us. None of that has been presented to them yet. So as I've been telling people, not because we want to be obstinate, but so many of us ran for city council on so many other broader issues. Recreation, youth, jobs, vacant lots. I mean, there's so many other things that are critical to the development of the city. Parcel 5 is one of a multitude of other things that I'm sure we'll be asked to address in terms of city council, but it's very hard for us to address a proposal that we haven't seen. Mm-hmm. A break-even analysis, we haven't seen that. We haven't seen any of those, a marketing plan, we haven't seen any of those things, so it's hard for us to weigh. If you had us back maybe in December or January, I don't know, we might be able to comment on it further, but it's hard for me to comment on something that we haven't seen. And there's been no legislation at city council yet.
Yeah, Jackie, as a current member, what do you anticipate happening?
All right. Well, at this point, I absolutely concur with my colleagues here because, you know, at this point, none of the meat of the information has been provided. And we had an additional meeting specifically held by the Arts and Culture Committee that brought together a number of different arts stakeholders, if you will. And that was actually a very positive conversation. We had individuals there from the Rochester Broadway Theater League, and we had probably probably well over, you know, a dozen other individuals from different arts organizations, really talking more about the future of arts and culture, what we need to do in overall in our downtown centers and in the neighborhoods, quite frankly, to be able to support those type of efforts. So I think that there is a lot more work to obviously be done. And at this point, the rest of us on council, again, we're also waiting for additional information before we can actually take a stance even ourselves at this point. But I think most of us are in the exact same camp that everyone else is that until we've been presented with all these information and the questions that are left to be answered, there really is not much more to do or say on that.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, we'll take our only break of the hour, and when we come back, we'll start taking your questions and comments. I see the phone starting to light up. The number here is 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can email the program at connections@WXXI.org, and you can find me on Twitter at MMacMedia. So we'll be back with the candidates for City Council from the Democratic Party next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a bit of a quiz for you. Listen to this sentence and see if you can identify the accent. My aunt needed a map to get around Rochester. You probably guessed it. That's what we call the Rochester accent. But it's officially called the Inland North or Great Lakes dialect. A University of Rochester researcher is studying it and how it changes. She joins us next on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack filling in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking to the winners of the Democratic primary for Rochester City Council, Malik Evans, Mitch Gruber, Willie Joe Lightfoot, and Jackie Ortiz in studio today. And we are about to start taking your questions and comments. Again, if you'd like to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. First up on the phones is Bonnie in Rochester. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. You were talking about, or the group there was talking about, the differences in the Democratic Party and fighting in between. I would like to take that in a different direction. I think that stuff refers to past situations. But the thing I see is that if you look at, I would say, Mitch especially, and the people who were on the Working Families Party who ran, but were not supported by the Democratic Party, when you talk about what people are looking for, that's a good thing to look at, because, frankly, what I see is a desire on the part of more people to have say and actualization in development and involvement of neighborhoods in a much more intense and serious way versus downtown investment, corporate welfare, unaffordable housing. That's where I see the divide, and I realize there's always different degrees of divide, but that's where I see why you have the groups I just identified as running. And until I hope the Democratic Party will understand that and really encourage people of that elk that ran in Working Families Party and Mitch's case to be more involved and to not be afraid to turn over some of the power to these folks. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Bonnie. I'll let our panelists respond.
Yeah, I would say that throughout the course of the campaign, there were a ton of really well-done neighborhood forums where you had a lot of community output saying that that the neighborhoods want to have a louder voice in City Council in City Hall. And I think that it was a really nice thing to hear. And I pride myself on having run a campaign where I promised to listen and to be present at neighborhood associations and someone who wants to strengthen neighborhood associations. And I plan to do that. So I appreciate the comment, Bonnie.
Anyone else like to weigh in?
And I'm on the Working Families Party line, too. And mm-hmm. I think the caller brings up a good point. I mean, it's important, and I said this in my previous comments when we were talking about downtown development, that you have to have a balance, that you have to be thinking about Jefferson Avenue also when you're thinking about what's down on Broad Street. And that's what people, I think, elect you to do. Some of the louder voices may not be people who are thinking about that, but it's what we were what I was elected for, even in my previous position. It's because that people want to be able to have a voice, and they want you to think about the whole city, just not a piece of it.
Mm-hmm. The one of the things that what I did differently this time when running, I didn't really have. I waited to put my platform out to after I did the petition time. And I did that on purpose because I wanted to knock on the doors and hear what the people were saying going across this city. And I think one of the things that they were telling me is that, you know, they were kind of tired of being kind of like dictated to, like, this is, you know, most people put their platform out like immediately, like, this is what I want to do. And I understand people have their passions and things, but we haven't even asked the people yet, like, what they want. You know what I mean? And we're supposed to be elected by them, for them. And so I waited till after before, and I made it very general because the thing that really resonated when I was out there was I told the people about my first 100 days, I was going to have a community forum, open up City Hall to the people, and then have a real detailed forum and capture their thoughts and what they want to see me move forward as policy in this city. And I think that was really resonated with voters, and I want to continue to do that. I think that's a great question that she asked. How do we do that? I think we have to continue to do what our colleagues have said, keep the dialogues going. Those forums were very good, and we have to continue to keep the community. This is an age where people are not communicating anymore, not one-to-one, face-to-face. It's more, you know, social media stuff. And so I think that people want to be heard, but then they also want a specific action plan to some of the things that they bring forth as ideas and policy for our city. So I'm very excited about having the opportunity to do that. And I think we have to continue to bring City Hall, the people to City Hall and let them know that that's their government, right, not ours. Mm-hmm.
I think just one other thing I'd like to add, and you know, we continue to hear these things, and I know for me personally, you know, resident feedback and participation from anyone, whether it be downtown or in the neighborhoods, is extremely important. But we have to take our ability to listen, right, to the next level, right? So listening is one thing, but I really feel, and actually in being in this position and having experienced some of the projects, whether those that have not necessarily gotten to where they want it to be at this point in terms of approval or success or whatever you want to call it, is taking that to a position where if the neighborhood and our residents are not necessarily in favor of something, we need to take that listening to the next. So what exactly does that process look like for us to actually operationalize that, right? So, you know, whether it's a certain percentage of the neighborhood, whether it's a sign-off, whether, I mean, there were a number of different ideas that were put throughout the last several months in order to really achieve this whole idea of including the input from the neighbors, right? We have tons of forms to listen to them, but then what do we do with that, right? So what does that does that process look like? And I think that it'll be interesting for all of us moving forward is to really, what do we do to operationalize that input that we get? And what do we do as far as that next level to make sure that it is actually internalized into the projects that are coming forward and in front of us?
Mm-hmm. Up next on the phones is Richard in Rochester. Hi, Richard.
Hello. The most recent census study of housing affordability in Rochester indicates that for seniors, those with extremely low incomes, under $20,000 a year, more than half have to pay more than 50% of their income for rent. One solution to that problem is the 57-year-old Cobbs Hill Village. The not-for-profit owner wants to tear it down and replace with moderate, middle, and market-rate housing. The Tenants Association says they love the community. 23 neighborhood associations have spoken up demanding that City Council refuse to approve extending the date to which this land in the middle of Cobbs Hill Park would revert to the city. What do you think?
Thanks, Richard. I'll start with Jackie.
Okay. Well, I've heard a number of different residents on this particular topic, and I've gone to a number of different forums, and I've met with individuals as well as smaller groups on this. And at this point in time, with the status that we're in regarding climate action control and a number of other topics that are very important for me personally, between resident input and neighborhood associations, as well as kind of the some larger, more global type of issues here, I stand with the residents and the neighbors at this point in time. For me, this is something that is extremely important, and increasing our carbon footprint in any way, shape, or form at this point, knowing that there is a number of other opportunities and land to be able to create this low income and affordable housing. I haven't seen that there is a disparity or some issue with not having other places potentially to have this. And so for me, there has been enough outcry at this point in time for me to stand with the residents.
Mm-hmm. Mitch.
Yeah, I mean, I echo Jackie, and I give all the neighborhood associations that have kind of come together on this issue a lot of credit for being very well organized and thoughtful with their approach. And bottom line for me is that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to think about putting a multi-story building in a park, in a place where we have some very much needed green space in the city, when there's a whole lot of opportunities to build. But I would agree with what Richard started with. I mean, senior housing is an incredibly important thing that we need to be focused on, especially as baby boomers start to age out of the workforce as well.
Mm-hmm. Malik.
Yeah. I live in that neighborhood, so I heard from the neighbors for years. Let me tell you something. Adam is opposed to that. I'd be ran out of the neighborhood if I was for it. But let me be clear. We have to understand the challenges that we have in this community with affordable housing. It's just not seniors are one piece, but overall, the percentages of that people are paying for rent on a regular basis is starting to dwarf their overall percentages in terms of their income. We have to find ways to keep affordable housing affordable. The other thing I'll say is, we have to be very careful when the city gives the green light or turns over places for people to build. And in parks, that's prime real estate. That's prime real estate. So we have to be very careful. And that's space that's supposed to be for everybody. So we have to be very thoughtful when we look at zoning and development on what it is that we agree to sign off on. I mean, you know, we don't need a new development in Highland Park or Genesee Valley Park. We need to keep our parks as sacred territory. We see what's going on at the national level. We need to be very careful from an environmental standpoint, but also just from a human decency standpoint, to make sure that we keep our parks open for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Willie.
Amen.
Okay. All right. A lot of agreement on that issue. Keeping it tight. I want to bring up the issue of police accountability. It's been a hot button issue recently. And City Council agreed in a meeting last week that there needs to be improvements in the Civilian Review Board. And City Council wants those changes in place by July 1st. Now, this was all prompted by the Ricky Bryant Jr. case. And listeners, if you're not familiar, Ricky Bryant is a teenager who says he was thrown off his bike and beaten by police officers in August of last year. His mother filed a complaint with the Civilian Review Board and a lawsuit in federal district court, saying that RPD officers violated his constitutional rights. So City Council issued a subpoena earlier this year to obtain information and video footage from the RPD regarding that incident. And Councilman Adam McFadden told City Newspaper this week, quote, "I think we have to look at the situation as what I would call a test case for possibly making changes to the Civilian Review Board process. There's a lack of trust and credibility in the Civilian Review Board's ability to hold anyone accountable," end quote. So I'd like to ask each of our guests if they agree with Councilman McFadden's statement and what you would hope to see if you do agree there needs to be changes with that process. We'll start with you, Mitch.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And again, kudos to the folks who worked on the Police Accountability Board proposal, to Ted Forsyth and Barbara Lacker-Ware and Rock Acts, and the list goes on and on. They were incredibly organized and made this a key issue for this election. I mean, we had one of several forums that council candidates had was exclusively about this exact proposal. And what I said that night is what I'll say again. I think this is incredibly hard work. It's going to be very, very hard to change something like this, like the Civilian Review Board, but it absolutely has to happen. And even in the report that they came out with, a lot of what they talked about was successes in Syracuse. And yet, what we know from at least what I know from research that I've done personally is that even the model in Syracuse hasn't proven to be nearly as successful as people want it to be. And when I say successful, I mean building back trust between civilians and police and the community at large, people feeling good about the way policing is happening. So I think that we need to be smart and thoughtful and look at models like what's happened in Syracuse, but also make sure that this is a really smart and strategic community conversation that builds the right processes and the right practices to make sure that we actually get the end goal, which is better police-civilian relationships.
What do you think should be the role of the police chief in the process. As it currently stands now, the police chief has final say in the civilian review board process. Do you think that should change?
I believe that the police accountability board has to have the authority to discipline. That was one of the things that, again, that the report called for. That's one of the things that I think has been a big sticking point, but that's where the teeth come in a police in a police review board. And so there has to be the authority, the opportunity to discipline.
Jackie, as a current member of council, you're probably hearing a lot of discussion. What has been your experience and your thoughts so far?
For me, this has been an evolution, right? So, and you said in the beginning that, you know, this was as a result of the Ricky Bryan case. No, I think this is as a result of many different cases, right?
I misspoke. The subpoena is related to the
correct.
Yes.
Correct. But I think overall, you know, over the last several years, we have tried to make some changes as we've gone along. And I really do believe that every step is trying to go into the right direction, right? And so now it's our chance to take that next step of what additional changes need to happen. Because when you look at here, what's happening locally and even nationally, we're at a point where we need to take bigger steps, right, at this point in time in order to be able to make sure that these relationships are solid, right? Because that's what the glue that holds the community together, the relationships that we have. And so I think we need to do this, but I think we need to do it in a smarter strategic way and a respectful way also to make sure that officers are also included in this process, right? There's been a lot of discussion. I completely understand how people feel when it happens to them or happens to a family member. But by the same token, we have to make sure that those people are included, but that we're also including in our partners in law enforcement, because at the end of the day, it also affects them as well. And so we have to do this as a partnership. We can't stand us on one side of the fence and the others, you know, officers on the others, because that's kind of where we are now, right? So if we don't come together on figuring out what the overall end solution here is that would satisfy all, then I think that we're still going to be kind of, you know, pushing up here against a brick wall here and still coming out with that same outcome. So when we talk about what are the goals and what are the outcomes here and who are the individuals that are providing their input, it has to be across the board and us for really to make the changes that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Willie Joe.
I was just going to say amen, but
you've already used that line.
Here's the issue with that. I agree with what's been said. However, I want to add to the fact that I hope we don't get so making this so intelligent that we forget common sense stuff. And the common sense stuff is the people that are getting disciplined should not be the ones that are on the committee. Like that's just not common sense. So, you know, you can be so smart that you forget common sense stuff that, you know, you can't expect them to discipline themselves. So I think that's what made people upset. That's what got people so looking at this situation like it just doesn't make sense. You know, it's just not fair. Also, I want to say that we also have to figure out a way where we can do it and still support our officers. Let them know that, you know, I'm a fireman. The police officers are out there every day putting their lives on the line. I've had my own incidences with the police, but I walk with them with clergy on patrol to this day. I want to continue to let them know we need police. We need their services. So we want to let them know that we support them. However, there's certain conduct that's happening nationally and even here locally that just unacceptable. And so when that happens, that there's going to be repercussions that are going to happen. So I support that it has to change. I agree with Councilman McFadden on what he said. And we've all said this over and over again at many different forums that we know that this has to happen. It's just how it's going to happen and how can we be sensitive to the fact that there are people, men and women in blue, that are out there doing a good job every day for our citizens, and that there's a few bad apples, and when that happens, they have to use common sense approach on how we deal with that.
Malik, where do you stand?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that absolutely. I mean, I think that in order to build trust in the community, people have to know they have to be able to trust the process. So we have to build a independent process that garners trust, not only for the citizens, but also for the police officers. And the test should be, at the end of a hearing, does a person walk away and say, man, I don't like the outcome, whichever side you're on, but the process was fair. And I don't think people feel that way right now. So how can you build a process that does that? It's long overdue. It has to be done. Other places have done it. We have to look at a multitude of places. I think Mitch brought up a good point. People bring up Syracuse, but as he said, that wasn't exactly the best. So what's working in maybe some other places? And then how can we make sure that it fits and where it works in Rochester? But I think we owe it to the citizens, but also to the police department to ensure that we have a fair, thorough process, because we have to build strength We have to strengthen community relations between the community and police. If we don't, we will never be able to move forward on crime and other issues if we don't strengthen that, that trust.
Mm-hmm. Back to the phones we go. Up next is Anthony in Rochester. Hi, Anthony.
Hello. So the candidates were talking about the Democratic Party and how they feel that they're going to get the party kind of riled up and kind of back together. But it sounded like they were talking more about the actual, you know, the politicians in the party. One of the problems that we're seeing everywhere is that a lot of the citizens are not very happy with the Democratic Party and are looking for outlets that don't involve a lot of the what has become of the Democratic Party, including campaign contributions. And you guys were talking about money and how much money you needed. So my first question is, what are the candidates planning on doing to reach out to the citizens who don't identify with the Democratic Party and not with the Republican Party also? And then my second question is related to campaign contributions. You know, I've been reading some of the financial statements for the campaign contributions of the candidates, and I was wondering if any of the candidates might bring up if they received any political contributions from anybody in the development of a Parcel 5, and that's about it.
Okay, thanks, Anthony. We'll start with Malik this time.
Nope, have not. In terms of development, I haven't gotten any money from any developers. But in terms of the getting the citizens involved, I think Mr. Lightfoot, what Willie Joe brought up is a way to get citizens involved. What I brought up in terms of ongoing political education, that is actually for citizens, in which I was talking about. But I think the caller is absolutely right. People. There's been a decline, actually, in party participation across the country. I mean, a lot of people are identified as blank or independent. So we need to have strong parties. As a political science major, we always talked about the importance of party in government, party in the electorate, and part of that party in the electorate is. People like the caller that just called in. I think one of the ways you do that is you have to go out and engage and talk to citizens, bring them in, tell them why they are involved. And then lastly, let me say this about money in politics. I have long been a proponent of public financing for campaigns. I don't know if it ever happened in my lifetime, but I will say, guess what? It's a necessary evil. You have to raise money in order to get your message out there. It's just a fact of life. But I would love to be able to say one day we would go somewhere with public financing of campaigns. But I'm also realistic. I don't see that happening in the near term. But I think that is also a way that sometimes deters people to get involved in politics because it takes just a lot of work to be able to raise money. To run for office, and you'd rather be out there talking to people about their issues and concerns.
Mm-hmm. Willie Joe,
real quickly, so everybody else can have a chance because I know you run out of time, right? Mm. No, I haven't got no money from any developers, and political education, registration, training, organizing is exactly what I was talking about, and that's for the public. And I especially want to look at the young folks, 18 to 35, because those are the ones to this day, even 30 years ago when my father was running, that weren't voting, and they're still not voting. My son voted this first time this year. Of course, he voted for a lot of us in this room. He was 18 years old. It was his first time voting. My daughter, who's 23, was her first time voting this year. So I had to ask her why. So we need to have those conversations. I want to start this next year doing political education, registration, training, organizing for the public to educate them and get them engaged and involved. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that question.
Mitch.
No money from anyone with Parcel 5 ties. And I will say to the caller, I think one of the big things that we need to do is we need to figure out how to have ideology be something that is embedded in this party and maybe in a bit of a deeper way. I mean, Willie Joe said before this is a popularity contest, and in a sense, he's right. And frankly, I wish it wasn't so. You know, one thing I work, I spend a lot of my time thinking about food stamps because my work at Foodlink. tell us people all the time. You put 100 Republicans in a room and ask them why they want to cut food stamps, you're going to get 100 of the same answers. We don't believe in handouts. We don't believe in government entitlements, dot, dot, dot. You ask 100 Democrats why they want to maintain or expand food stamps, and you're not going to hear any type of ideological consensus. Oh, my uncle had food stamps. It was important for him. Or I heard that they're really impactful. Or I read this study. The answer is food's a basic human right. Government has to have a responsibility in providing those things, right? We don't have an ideological underpinning in the way that we need to, and that should bring not just the Democratic leaders together, but also people in the party who want an ideology of making sure that everybody has a chance to live a quality life together.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jackie.
So I'll start with that first question that you had there. And there are already efforts. And so I am personally involved in an organization called La Cumbre. And they're an organization, or really a form of individuals, that have been focusing on a number of different goals. One of those is actually civic engagement and education. And we have provided a few different workshops over the last year or two, and both in English and fully in Spanish, because it's extremely important for us to make sure that we are targeting all of those who reside in our community. And the fact is that we have a growing population of those who, unfortunately, English is not their first language on there. And so as part of that education, it's not about parties. And for me, as part of this education, because it's about the issues, right? So when we're talking about the basic human rights in terms of food and shelter and all of those kinds of things, really that's what that civic engagement education really kind of stems from, is understanding what are these basic things that we need to all be working towards, and how do we do that? So we teach a portion that Advocacy 101 to be able to get to those the heart of the issues there. Mm-hmm. And I hear your music going.
That's okay.
So.
Second part of that question, have you received any money?
Yes, and so I have received a number of different donations from a variety of developers, from labor, from everything. So it is absolutely very possible that I have, but I am very proud of all the different donations, because for me, it shows that I'm a candidate that spans across, whether they're individuals, developers, or from labor.
Thank you. And thanks to all the candidates for joining us today. I'm sorry, listeners, if we couldn't get to your question or comment or call, but we will have more conversations with these candidates and also other candidates who will be on the ballot in November. So my thanks to Malik Evans, Willie Joe Lightfoot, Mitch Gruber, and Jackie Ortiz for joining me today. And listeners, thank you for all of your input. More Connections is next.